Because it's like, I mean, that's almost a...
Good evening, everyone. It's May 9th, 2022. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's regular city council meeting. And now, if you'd all please rise. A short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this city and wisdom as our city council makes decisions tonight. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, I'd like to welcome you again, and tonight, item 1C is our citizen input. Is there any citizens tonight who would like to address the city council? Yes, Jake Mendez Jr. Please state your name and address for the record, and you have up to 5 minutes to address the council.
Yes, I'm Jake Mendez Jr. I reside here at Othello, Washington. I'm an activist for the community of Othello and also an ACLU member. I just wanted to address the city council in regards to the previous meetings regarding the graffiti and also the youth programs that I thought you guys initiated talking about doing. I just wanted to know if this is really going to happen. Is this all talk? I'm getting the citizens' input on when this is going to happen. And I would like to know briefly if, you know, if after the meeting or tomorrow, if I can get some more information on rather of what the city can do as far as the graffiti that's going on and to try to get the youth to be more up in a positive way and not to be looked at as criminalized just for the environments that they grew up in and for being the minorities here in Othello. And I wanted to be one of those activists that would like to just step up and take that role and try to leave in a positive way for these youth here in Othello, to try to do something more better and more proactive and productive here in the city of Othello instead of looking at them as criminals. That's not something that I want for my community. And that's what I don't want the Othello Police Department or anyone else in that force or in the Adams County to look at them as criminals. That's my only input, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address the city council tonight? Hearing none, I'll go to item 1D, which is our roll call. All council members are present except for Mark Snyder, who said he was working late tonight, so he asked if he could be excused.
I move to excuse Councilman Snyder. Second.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I'd like to move to the approval of our agenda, item 2.
I'll make the motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move to our consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda. Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now, I'd like to call forward Kurt Angier for a 10-year recognition. You know, 10 years to a younger person seems like a long time, but 10 years to someone like myself goes by really quickly. It's important in life, Kurt, to take particular moments and commemorate them. And this is what the city has done and enjoyed for many of its employees who have been faithful to provide service to the city of Othello. And this is your 10-year anniversary. So I'd like to say a few words and then give you an award. So according to the bio, Kurt was born and raised in Santa Ana, California. He graduated from Santa Ana High School school. It didn't say the year, though.
1980 wasn't that.
He worked as a paper boy from 12 to 16 years of age. And he helped manage a grocery store from 17 years old until he retired.
From grocery?
Yes. He moved to Othello and worked as a bus driver and at the Bailey's Youth Ranch, where he helped foster 12 kids. He began his career as a dispatcher in 2012. He became an evidence tech in 2018 and was nominated by the police department as support staff of the year in 2014 and 2021. Herb helps with the CPLs, evidence accreditation, and firearms. He enjoys visiting his grandkids in California and spending time with his family. And this award is presented to Kurt Anger in recognition of 10 years service to the city of Othello from May of 2012 to May 2022. Kurt, it's a real honor. Thank you.
You can make a speech. Are you going to have a speech?
I didn't prepare one.
Perfect.
And look at the city and
look
forward to this
thing with you.
Thank you.
You do a great job.
Thank you, Kurt.
They're having snacks now.
They are.
We need a short recess.
Recess to go.
We heard that Kurt likes cheesecake.
Oh, shoot.
Good snacks.
Doesn't look like we're joining in. Okay, so the next item on our business is 4B. This is regarding surveillance cameras, and our police chief, Phil Shank, is going to ask the council to take a look at his partial solution at the moment.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We're in the process of putting wide a citywide IT-driven surveillance system that I wholeheartedly support. It includes cameras in all of our parks, all of it centrally monitored here at the city, at the police department. And I'm being told that once we sign that it could be 4 to 8 weeks delivery time, and that's great. In the meantime, we have a significant graffiti problem, and we have 4th of July coming up. What I'm proposing here is, and originally I proposed, we were looking at about an 8-month delivery time on the IT surveillance system or security system. It's now looking much quicker. So I've pared down what I was asking. So if any of you read this last week on the agenda, I was asking for 3, and it was close to $48,000 or $50,000 in there. I've now pared that down to 1, just to prioritize Lions Park. And the idea being, we would put this in the area of the skate park. It would monitor the skate park as well as the bathrooms. The benefit here would be it would also help us just for security, and that's recording, not monitoring, but recording during the the 4th of July festival. If you, as you've seen with some of the issues down in Sunnyside and Toppenish, Kennewick, we need every tool we can get. So what I'm proposing here is about a $13,000 delivered solution. It includes a 360-degree recording, as well as a system that will point and zoom. All of this is cellular based, so it's it would be able to be integrated into the solution that Abner's putting together. And then once, if this is phased out, or when it's phased out, the police department would also use this system for drug houses, gang houses, other, we would move it and use it where we'd need it. But it, we believe we would be able to get this up and running in four to six weeks, so in time for 4th of July. So what I'm proposing, and it does have a annual cost after that, should we continue paying it, and that's mostly for the maintenance as well as the cellular service that's transferring the data to us. So I'm proposing the $13,000, probably another $2,000 in electrical installation, and then funding-wise, this is unbudgeted, so I would suggest we look towards ARPA funds for that.
Okay. Just a quick update for the council. If we haven't even spent $100,000 of the ARPA funds, and we're due to get another deposit or tranche next month. So one of the things the council has been waiting for also is the citywide system. We had it on the agenda. We had to pull it from the agenda because there was a couple items that you know, Kelly had noticed about them that he wanted us to, we just had to further develop it. But the good news is that it isn't going to take a year to get, or 8 months to get that. Apparently we can have our cameras within, what was it, 6 to 8 weeks?
Yeah.
And so that'll be on the agenda in 2 weeks. And Abner will be here to present that. But there was just some, we just couldn't get them put together by tonight's meeting. So this is for this a specific purpose. And that's all. If you have any other questions.
The other thing I failed to mention that I'll mention is that this is purchasing wise, this is contract, this is GSA pricing. So it's like state bid, but it's federal. It'll allow us to avoid going out to bid, so it'll save us a lot of time.
So going from 3 to 1 makes it quicker?
No, saves us money. So three, I would propose three if it wasn't for the fact that Abner's system is coming. And what I was just going to propose would have added a camera in Kiwanis and Tagaris, but those will be covered under Abner's proposal that's coming in front of you.
Oh.
So this will become a mobile?
This would become, I wouldn't say mobile, but
yeah.
But
it can be moved.
We'd be able to relocate it.
Yeah.
The priority here is Lions Park. For me, Lions Park during 4th of July.
So if this is approved, when will you order that camera?
Tomorrow.
So is this the one like that you got the trailer with your solar panel?
This is not a trailer-driven version. That is something I've considered. We could move those around if we had events. You know, but at this point, this is a fixed one that we would put on a light pole above the skate park.
These are totally mobile cameras, right?
I would say it's mostly mobile. It's 110 volt. They do make solar versions. This, the one I've spec'd out here, is a AC version.
So the reason I'm asking, when I read the thing earlier, and it still said 3 when I read it, but it talked about using 3 in graffiti areas. And here's where I'm going with this. I would like to see you get the 3 cameras. For the simple reason that it was actually brought up earlier tonight in public comment, we're getting buried, that graffiti is getting worse and worse. I go down some alleys in town and they're just getting more. So you can use them for that or anything else. I would like to see you get 1-1.
I got a quick question. What is the difference between the stationary electrical version versus the solar?
I was in Yakima last week, mm-hmm. at Union Gap, actually. Spencer and I had gone to Safeway. And when we were there, in the middle of the parking lot, was a big flashing blue light with cameras, solar panels on a trailer. And obviously, it looked like they'd been having some crime issues in that neighborhood. So they parked this thing right in the middle of it and were recording everything. Now, what I would actually propose, Mr. Everett, would be to start with the one, get it in Lyons, make sure it works. Because what if this turns out to be a really good solution where we want to go mobile, then I would want to consider the trailered completely mobile versions instead of this, which was a fixed version. So that might be a better solution.
So the solar requires a trailer?
It doesn't, well.
The solar wouldn't be small enough for it to stop.
No.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the solar panels that they had on this one in Union Gap looked like it was probably a pretty permanent setup, even though it's on a trailer. They had probably 200 to 400 watt panels. So I'd say a good 4 foot by 8 foot worth of panels.
That's kind of hard to set up around.
And so that's why I haven't come with that kind of a solution. What we're proposing right now is specific to, I'm worried about 4th of July. And I'm going to talk more about that during the new business.
Okay. Do some horse trading with Public Works. They're getting rid of a flatbed. You won't need a trailer.
Okay. Any other questions, Council? Somebody like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the Chief's request.
A second. Either way.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'd like to move to item 4C, which is the ordinance amending the OMC Chapter 1456 Underground of Utilities. City Council has talked about amending this ordinance for some time. We now have it in front of you. And Kelly, do you want to walk the City Council through this?
Sure, you bet. Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if everybody's had the opportunity to take a look at the suggested revisions, but just to go over what the purpose of these revisions were, as the Council may recall, there's been over the past few years, we've had several requests for variances for relief from our underground ordinance or undergrounding of utility ordinance. And our ordinance currently requires undergrounding in a lot of situations. And primarily when requests have come before Council for the variances and they've been requested is when utility providers, whether it be internet, or telephone or electrical, what have you, when they want to provide a service to a new area or a service that the community needs that it doesn't have yet. I think the best example of that is high-speed internet. I know there's been efforts within Athel to expand access to high-speed internet. Utilities coming in want to provide that because they want a new customer base. But what we've found, or at least what they claim, is that it's too expensive to put their utilities underground, and if that's going to be a requirement, they're not going to come into the city. And Council, I believe, every time, or at least nearly every time, has granted that variance. And it began to create the question of, well, if we're going to grant a variance every time somebody comes and asks for one, or most times, should we really be looking at reforming our underground utility policy in the city, so because the variances are supposed to be an exception to the rule, but the exception in this case appeared to have become the rule. So I modified the underground utility ordinance or proposed modifications for Council to review, which would allow or require utilities to underground them only in situations where there is not an previously existing aerial structure in the area that could serve the neighborhood. And that seemed to be, with discussions with staff, a good way to strike a balance between what we're seeing, the needs of the utility, and the needs of the city, which is needs for services, but also our desire to start getting these utilities underground. Typically, where you're going to see the increased expense, and when it's harder for a utility to stomach that, is when you're requiring them to install utilities underground when there's an aerial structure right there. Because they're like, well, you know, why not? Why can't we go up? And so that's how I designed the revisions to this ordinance. Certainly happy to answer any questions anybody has. I think that's a good summary of what we did and why we did it. But happy to answer any questions.
It doesn't avoid the fact that they have to obtain a permit for the right-of-way use, does it?
Can you say that again?
It does not void the fact that they have to get a permit for the use of the right-of-way.
Correct. It does not. And that's a requirement in the code. It's also a requirement in every franchise agreement that we've entered into with the utility. And so that will continue.
Okay. The only problem I have, and I agree 100% that in the developed areas it should be overhead because it's more convenient. And it's cheaper, but maintaining them to the standard, I mean, they have to do it to a standard, and half of them don't. Right now, if you go down Cunningham, there's a whole bunch of Avista poles that were eliminated when they did the new line, and in between those poles are communication poles that have been left by Avista just to support the communication wire. Somebody from that communication company should be addressing that, putting it onto the new poles, then they can get rid of the old poles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with John. When we went to the ordinance requiring the undergrounding, that's exactly why we did, is because there was so much stuff hanging and not being taken care of, that we would rather see it go underground where it is out of sight and out of the way of, you know, garbage trucks and everything else. And it looks much better, but we ran into the issue of they kept coming back for ordinances because they didn't want to put it underground because the cost was too much or you know, whatever their reasons were. But I agree with John. There's got to be something we can do to make sure that they're maintaining and keeping those nice and neat and tidy on the poles. And they don't.
From our previous discussions that we've had in the past in regard to this, the right-of-way, the actual permit is given to Avista. And then they're piggybacking on Avista's mm-hmm. permit.
Mm-hmm.
And Avista should be monitoring these people and getting them to come in and reattach their cabling mm-hmm. to their new poles. But it's not happening. And I'm not satisfied with what I see.
Yeah, and so, well, there's different ways that we can do that. One way is, well, I think the big distinction, there's two ways to do it. One is to be proactive, and the other one is to be reactive, just generally speaking, right? So we can have a proactive model, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chief, but what you would be doing is you'd have perhaps code enforcement, maybe it'd be Public Works, but you'd have an individual who would be identifying these areas and then working with the utilities through our code enforcement procedures to address that. Prior to tonight, I didn't go back and review all our code requirements or the franchise requirements regarding that, nor the look the specific enforcement mechanisms, but I believe that they are there. I don't want to speak out of turn because I didn't review them before tonight. And so we could be proactive. The city could adopt a policy of being proactive and looking for those issues and going to the utility and going through a process to get them to fix those issues. You know, certainly a good way to do it. But it is intensive in terms of hours that an employee or a couple of employees would have to vote to that. And I don't know if staff resources are there for that, the current level of resources. The other way to do it is to be more reactive. And the way, and a style on that, that I think that we could change the code to facilitate that would be to require anytime a utility comes in to get a right-of-way permit, to provide a service to a new area or whatnot, we could explore making it a condition of being allowed the authority to do that would be to fix the issues of which we're aware. And that would be a system of the city getting information, getting complaints, and we would know that when a utility comes in and is requesting to be able to establish a new service. Whether it's in a new area or an old area, even if it's in an area that has aerial structures and they can put them on those aerial structures, we can nonetheless condition that on them fixing the existing issues that are identified by the city. So I think those are just generally, just sitting here right now, two ways that I see that the city, two routes the city could go, and we can explore those.
That should be in before this ordinance. So first of all, this should have came through the utility, Underground Utilities Committee. But that, at a minimum, the reactive needs to be in this ordinance before it's passed. This is just kind of, this does nothing to, and you guys both said it, nothing to
Well, I would like to see both the proactive and the reactive used, because the problem we had in the past, and one of the reasons we went to underground, like I said, is because it looks bad. It does. Our town looks bad when we've got stuff hanging all over the place, and it's not being taken care of. The other problem we had was these companies were coming in and hanging stuff, and they weren't even getting permits. So even though we were requiring permits and them to come in and underground, they would just go out and hang it up, and they were out of town before, and then all of a sudden we got more wires. So
I think the ordinance was passed in 95, and none of us had anything to do with that. And there wasn't a lot of fiber being attached back then. It was more cables, more TVs and television, and stuff like that. But today, they're, to get the high-speed internet, to get the fiber optics that people need, that we want them to have, and we've seen the need for it now in the last 5 years. I don't want to stand in the way of progress, but yet I don't want to see these communication companies getting way harder.
So council knows, when I was drafting the revisions, because I was focused on when do we want to underground, when do we not want to, because the problem I was focusing on resolving was the constant utilities constantly coming to us and asking for variances and us granting them, and not having, perhaps maybe not having a clear policy to the public and to utilities as to what the city's policy is regarding undergrounded utilities. So I was not, I did not put in a provision for, how do we go about cleaning up the lines that, are drooping and aren't secured securely. And so that wasn't an issue I was trying to resolve with this ordinance, but these are all good points. And we can add that, we can certainly add that in into this.
I think for you to do that, you need to get a better understanding of what they're actually doing. They're piggybacking off of Vista. Vista has the poles for the power supply.
Correct.
They're piggybacking off of them. They're actually, they're permits with the city, but it's also, there's a license agreement with the Vista.
Mm-hmm.
I guess,
mm-hmm.
I don't think Vista has a choice.
They have to allow them to do it. Yeah.
But
when they make a change on those power poles, when they do, they cut them down and put new ones in, those people should only have a certain amount of time to correct their issue so that those poles can be removed. They shouldn't stand alone as power, as communication poles.
Yeah.
Right. And there is a system under the, well, Federal Communications Commission, FCC. There are rules and regulations regarding that, because yes, they do need to share space on their poles. Those are their poles, and the other providers are attaching to the poles, you know, through Avista, through their right-of-way access. Of course, they have their own franchise agreements and their own right of access, but because of the, you know, there's a limited number, there's a limited space in the city's right-of-ways. And so the federal government has, for communication facilities and other facilities, they have rules and regulations that govern the relationship of all the utility providers using that one pole. So we can also, we can use that, that framework as a starting point, and we can, you know, create a, we can add provisions to this proposed revised ordinance to allow the city to condition the, you know, the giving permission to utilities to, you know, install new lines or do other, you know, extend services within the city to addressing those issues. And we can, you know, I will take a look at the federal system set into place, and we'll see how much of that we can use and just incorporate that into our framework. And that should be the most simple way to do it. I won't know, devil's in the details usually, so I'll have to take a look at that. But certainly, that is very doable, and we'll have that to you at next council meeting.
Mayor, if we push this off, is there a particular project that might be waiting on this right now, tonight?
I'm aware of one, but I mean, it takes them a while to mow.
So does that impact any existing contracts?
I don't think
that
so.
We have?
No, not any that we have.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it probably should run through the Underground Utilities Committee.
Okay. Well, I think tonight, as Kelly explained, we use this as a placeholder, so that we could get some feedback, because we knew we were going to have to change it, because it wouldn't. And one of the things also was pointed out was item, or in 010, we use the term where it says residents of the city require that electrical, telephone, TV, cable distribution facilities is the terminology we use in that paragraph. And then in 020, we define a different, that electrical or communication facilities. I think I talked to you about this.
We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, a member of the public had brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to change that definition into this 010 and keep it identical where it says the term electrical or communication facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's defined, which means everything that we're talking about, which includes the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's just it's a minor thing, but it would clean that up. And then once you have that prepared, Kelly, I can have a underground utility meeting with the committee, and if there's any other suggestions, or we're probably going to discuss what the federal regulations are and what the new language is, and we'll come back with a recommendation for the city council.
That'd be great, Joe.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a problem, and I think, how many years ago was it? 3 or 4 years ago, we had pictures from all over town showing these poles. And yeah, when you say it needs to tidy up, it does need to tidy up. And I also favor both A and B solutions, mm-hmm. both code enforcement, the proactive, and then the reactive one, of course, would be in our ordinance. So I think you guys have been talking about this for some time, and we finally brought this back. And we just need to finish the business. So
the work they've been doing on 7th, it's been going pretty good. It looks okay. You know, I mean, it's very uniformed on the, all the way down the street.
On 14.
You know, I'm the biggest complainer on this. I know I am. But if you get these companies to clean their wires up, get them off the ground, clean them up so they just don't look horrible, I would shut up and I would say, no, you know. But I can't with the companies, what they're doing with the wires. Even one of the big companies in town, I talked to one of their engineers a couple weeks ago, and he's laughing at us. We told this company to clean these wires up 5 years ago, and here we are back again because they haven't done a thing with them. You know, their own engineers are saying, they're idiots. You know, they just don't care. So.
Well, I think if it's at all possible, if we have the ability to do, you know, I think, what do we have? Class A, B, C, D,
we need
E.
Some teeth on the ordinance.
Yeah, that we, you know, violation of city ordinance, whatever, and then it's so much a day, or whatever the, you know, whatever the penalty is for not, you know, code enforcement sends them a, you know, a request that they need to clean up their wires and they don't do it, then there needs to be some kind of teeth, if we can, Kelly, to. I don't know. I mean, this has been an ongoing problem forever, and I think the council really would like to clean it up, or at least give us an ability to address it, and hopefully we can, you know, we can begin to hatch it away at the problem, because it's all over town.
If there's a company that's going to do work and pull a permit, and they have to do some cleanup, if it's that same company, why don't we have them clean it up before we issue the permit, you know?
Yes, but we also have to have some teeth in that ordinance so that if they are start pulling the same thing where they're coming in flying by night and putting wires up without getting a permit and then they're gone, we need to have some way to deal with that too.
Oh, you mean those guys that come in with the white unmarked trucks that don't have a single information of who they are and what they're...
Next thing you know, they got a street closed off.
That's Homeland Security.
That's a disinformation.
Yes. Thank you, Council. Thank you, Kelly.
You bet.
I'd like to go next to item 4D, which is a resolution amending the interlocal agreement between Adams County Park and Rec District Number 1 and the City of Othello. Construction, operation, and ownership of an aquatic center. All right, Kelly?
All right, so I was asked to draft a document to amend the current interlocal agreement between the City and Adams County Park and Rec District Number 1 pertaining to the city swimming pool. So as I'm sure council recalls, the city doesn't currently own the title to the swimming pool, but Park and Rec District does, and it does so under an interlocal agreement that was signed back in 2006 and recorded April of 2006. And that had to do with, at that time, the Park and Rec District was, of course, they had bonding, or they have the authority to levy taxes and issue bonds. And so the city transferred ownership of the pool to the Park and Rec District so they could use their taxing authority and bond issuing authority to be able to raise finances for construction of a new pool. Of course, the city agreed to contribute money annually to maintain the pool, as well as pay the Park and Rec District $10,000 every year during the life of the bonds. And the $10,000 was to reimburse the Park and Rec District for administrative expenses. There's been talk amongst the district and the city with everything that's going on, you know, with the potential Tagaris Park acquisition, or at least the current interlocal agreement allowing the city to use, operate, and maintain Tagaris Park, and a number of other things. The district may be interested in transferring ownership of the pool back to the city early. And that's what this amendment, it amends the contract to allow that to happen. And, well, to require that to happen. And under the terms of the agreement, it allows the city, gives the city the authority to prepay the remaining $10,000 payments that are required through the end of the interlocal agreement. Currently, the interlocal agreement goes to, oh, I forgot, I believe it's 2026. 26. And so there'd be the payment of 2022, and then 23, 24, 27, 25.
Because it's 6 years.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, 27.
Yeah,
okay.
It says 27 here. 26
I know, but the agreement.
Yeah, and, well, we can look at the agreement. The,
I know there's 6 years, so including this.
It might
this.
Be through 26.
Through the end of.
Yeah.
22, 23, 24, 25, 26 is only 5 years. And I know there's 6 more payments we owe the district.
Yeah. Yeah, in the page 4, the term of the agreement, so it ends December 31st, 2026. We can determine the number of payments that would be remaining and get an agreement with the district on that. But the we don't actually need to resolve that tonight necessarily, because the amendment doesn't say how many payments are remaining. It just requires $10,000 that the city can prepay those remaining payments.
Okay.
So we can take a look at that. And I couldn't find a recorded, I believe, I'd heard there was an amendment, but I couldn't find a recorded version or a signed version of an amended contract. And so I was working with the original. But we can work with the district to identify if there is a agreement that was entered into subsequent to the April 2006 agreement. But it's a simple amendment. Allowing the city to prepay that annual obligation, and it requires the district to transfer the pool back to the city. And happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, so just for the council, for this resolution, there's 2, maybe 3 issues you need to consider. Number one, this doesn't have anything to do with Tagaris Park. This has to do with the operation of the city swimming pool. And so it also affects bonds. This was complex. This just wasn't a simple thing. There was a lot of research that had to go into it. Kelly had talked to bond counsel. So that's one issue. The other issue is that the city doesn't own the swimming pool. It's owned by the Park and Rec District. And so in order for the city, as a condition in this resolution, if we do prepay, we want the Park and Rec District to sign the ownership of the swimming pool over to the city. Yeah. And so that's an issue that that the council needs to be aware of and that we addressed in this, and that we can prepay up to the balance of what we owe in one payment to the Adams County Park and Rec District.
There wouldn't be any encumbrances by the bond on that property then?
There would not. There currently are no encumbrances from the bond on that property. Bonds are not secured, directly secured by property. What they're secured by the taxing authority's promise to levy and collect mm-hmm. taxes.
So
that's the
that
security.
Off.
So the Park and Recs District, I mean, they could get rid of all their real property, and that doesn't affect the validity of the bonds or the ability of the bond holders to be able to to enforce those bond obligations.
So yeah, so the bond holders or the residents voted for that bond levy back in 2006 or 8. I don't remember exactly. And so that obligation still rests with the taxpayers. So they're going to still have to continue to pay on their property taxes, and then that will pay off those bonds according to the schedule that was adopted. They did recently, in 2019, refinance those bonds because it was a lower rate. But other than that, the city's ownership of the pool would be secured if we pay this obligation off to the Adams County Park and Rec. Right now, they own the pool.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yes.
So I'll answer some complicated things, and I hope it's a really simple answer. So first of all, since the county, actually, I have a question. The Adams County Park and Rec Board is in existence because of Daguerre's Park, correct?
And this, well, actually, they came into existence mainly because of the swimming pool.
So.
And then the Daguerre's Park was another issue that we created the interlocal agreement with them.
So basically, that kind of complicates my thinking on this. But I was just kind of basically wondering if Daguerre's Park is involved in it anymore. I want to know where their $60,000 going. Not that I necessarily need to know that for this subject, but as an Adams County resident, I want to know where that $60,000 is. But the more important question is, according to this contract, the city's only obligated to spend $100,000 a year on that pool.
Right.
City's been spending a lot more than $100,000 a year on that pool.
Right.
So that should obligate that Adams County Parks and Rec District to cover everything over $100,000. Which they're not doing.
According to the contract, that's what it says.
So if we go back over the last 14 years that we've been paying that $10,000, the city has well overpaid that bond payment back.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, too.
So it's kind of like squeezing blood from the turnip, though.
They have no way to raise money.
Yeah,
I'm not asking to go back and refund that money. I'm asking, do we need to spend that $60,000 when we've already well spent well over that the last 14 years?
Well,
and especially if we don't know where that $60,000 is going anyway.
If you look, well, I do, and I can partially explain it. What you have is a situation before this council was ever seated or anybody here was ever involved in it. The city needed a swimming pool. They tore out their old one. They weren't going to continue to put money in the old pool. And so at the time, the mayor and the city council decided that they didn't want just the city residents. I mean, this was a thing that the city council was hung up on at the time, is they didn't want the city residents to pay for this pool while county residents were able to use it too, but not pay the tax on the swimming pool. So what they did is in order to build the swimming pool, they needed money. So they were going to have to pass a bond levy in order to do it. So what they did is rather than pass passing a bond levy, with the residents to pay it, they went to the Adams County Park and Rec districts because their boundaries was the Othello School District boundaries. So agreements were made between those entities, and those agreements were basically the $100,000. Maybe that's what it cost to run the pool 14 years ago at that point. But they're over their head. They were taking care of Daguerre's Park, and they basically, all they had was the $10,000 from us to do it. I think they floated 9 or 10 bond levies, every single, just maintenance and operation ones like the school district. None of them ever passed. And so the park continued for years to be maintained by volunteers from the Lions Club and others, and you had people like Pete Daguerre's and Roger Teamy and a bunch of other people in the community helped keep that park maintained. So no, I mean, I looked at that too, and I kind of thought the same thing, is like, well, but when they came to, I mean, again, this is just a cooperative arrangement. When they came to the city asking if the city would take it over, they were in trouble. They had two levies that they had done, and the cost of those were $10,000 each. They have auditors that are charging them some ridiculous amount of money, the state auditors. And so, I mean, 35,000 of that approximately is going to go just to that. And then they had other expenses that are still unpaid to the Housing Authority, to RDO, and to other people that they gave me a list. And there might be at most 15,000 left over after they pay all the debt that they owe. But this would allow them to get out of debt. So that's my history on it. That's what I know about it.
So the $60,000 is going to our district to be able to pay off
their debt.
What they have. Okay.
So they could walk away. And the one of the things that Kelly and my conversation was is that, well, what if this park and rec district goes defunct? Who's going to then, if we wait till the end of this agreement, who's going to then at that time sign the pool back over to the city? And especially if we've already given them all the money. So we decided that, well, if we give them the money, we want them to sign the pool, and we want to do this now because they have a board now. We don't want to have to go deal with that issue at a later time.
Worse than probate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be worse.
So
this will give us the title of the pool also.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the purpose of the amendment, is to get title, the city to get title of the pool now versus 4 or 5 years from now.
This is pool only.
Garrett Park's
done
it.
Yeah.
We already own Garrett Park.
Not yet. I haven't signed the documents, but they're supposed to be ready at the end of this week.
Well,
in essence, the decision was made.
It ends the contractual obligation that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The $60,000, so let's do it.
It also gives us the pool back before they dissolve.
Okay, I think the decision to advance that payment is going to be a separate one in a council meeting, but this is just to give us the authority to do it.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to make the motion to adopt a resolution 2022-09 authorizing the mayor to execute and attach amendment A to the interlocal agreement between Adams County Park District Number 1 and City of Othello regarding the construction, operation, and ownership of the Aquatic Center.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Now we'll move to item 4E, which is the public versus private comparison for weed spraying. At our last city council meeting last week, it was pointed out that we didn't have a comparison of doing it ourselves versus using a private company. I think we've all become, the last year, we've talked about this issue over and over again. We've discussed it. I've had different discussions with all of you, I think. But for the comparison, the private side, which is on the right, you already have that bid from Outback Spraying, which is $37,200 a year. On the public side, currently we don't require spraying a particular type of certification, of course, although you need it if you are going to spray. The union we'd have to negotiate we'd have to enter negotiation. That's a negotiable item with the union. So we would have to enter into negotiations. They already started off. They want a full-time person with experience and all the certifications and licenses, plus an additional seasonal to help. I'd include any cost of seasonals because we already have, I think, in the budget. Well, we've approved 6. Certification. I gave an estimate of $150,000. It might be more than that. Of course, there's also the liability. The city carries liability insurance, but this would require us to carry environmental liability insurance. And the additional cost of that would be approximately $2,500. There's also the issue of record keeping of all of our spraying and chemicals, what we used, the times, the dates. And that's required by the state of Washington. Equipment, we currently have a 1,500 gallon tank That 1,500 gallon tank is what we use to water the flower pots for Lynette. So we aren't going to use that for spraying. We have a 150 gallon tank. That's used for chlorination for the for our wells. So we're not going to use that tank. And so what we have is a 50 gallon tank. And the reason we have a 50 gallon tank is that comes underneath the state requirements for reporting. You have to be over 50 gallons. I don't know if it's 50 or 100. And so we also have a we have a boom sprayer, but the boom sprayer is too large for going down the alleys and with the obstructions. So with spray tank, a new boom sprayer, chemical tank containment site, which we would have to create, and an isolated site to keep all of our spray equipment. We estimated that cost at $70,000. That also included a vehicle to, you know, hang on to a larger tank because of the weight of the water. You're going to need a larger vehicle. We also would have to pay for our chemical, PPE, and gear. That's an estimate of around $8,000 a year. They would be required to have access to a wash-up facility. The shower in the shop isn't working. That would also have to be fixed. So that estimated annual cost is $78,577.34. The annual cost in the first year would cost the city about $148,000. So I've had conversations with some of you. You don't agree with some of the numbers or even the methods. I understand that. So I think rather than us going back and forth and back and forth, I'm going to give everybody one opportunity to speak, and I'll start with Corey.
So yeah, obviously your numbers here are a lot better than the last time I talked to you.
Yeah.
But I'm still not buying them. I'll give you everything except for the equipment. $70,000 is way out of line. And regardless, let's say even it is $70,000, your first year, call it $148,000. Because you get to remember, out of that $148,000, almost $70,000 of that is coming from an employee, which Terry wants anyways. You know, and that's going to be an ongoing expense, a yearly expense. So your annual cost is $78,000. Picking up that $70,000 for that employee, you're down to the cost of $8,000 a year for spraying. Okay. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just. But I said I wasn't going to argue it, so I made my point. My stance hasn't changed. The city needs to be doing this. That's my opinion. I'm one person opinion. So.
Thank you, Corey.
Would we be, for this year, is this even feasible for the city to do year one? Are we looking at this more of a long term? How late are we to, like, for the equipment and to get all of the chemicals? Can the city even attain that this year?
I don't think that we can attain all of this by the time. I mean, we need to start spraying now. We're a little behind our time, and I think the council had said that we were. Probably should go with the contract for a year, but I don't think that, I mean, it just wouldn't be timely. And last year I don't think he sprayed till after the 4th of July the first time, and it was because we didn't get a contract approved till June. So that's where we're at, Maria.
Can I say one more thing? I do want to correct something that I did say last week. About him charging $350 for last night's rain. That was $350 an acre, not an hour. So that was a misreading of his billing on my part.
Thank you.
I misread that too, Corey. Shocker, I'm not perfect. I know. I'll keep it short and sweet.
I only have one question. Did he accept the offer for 1 year?
I haven't heard back.
So we don't know. Just in the future, I'd like to start looking at departmentalizing the Public Works Department and look at the tasks that are being conducted by each department, getting leads in positions for those departments. You know, we're trying to handle everything under one umbrella down there, and I'd like to see it departmentalized. Park and Rec take care of their own, you know, in charge of all of the parks.
That means we need to start.
And have, you know, Public Works people concentrating on Public Works. And then, you know, the wastewater treatment division be, you know, their own department and work within their budgets they're given.
Taking notes.
We're getting to a point where we need it in this community.
I know, we've had these discussions.
Okay.
So
that's all I have to say.
Gina?
I will say I agree with John. I think that the Public Works needs to be departmentalized. I think we need to start adding people to those departments so that you're not running, you're not pulling people out of all of the departments to go put out fires constantly, because things don't get done that way. It's like everybody runs over to this fire and then they run over to this fire and no, nothing's getting done over here. When it comes to this, I think that we have a fiduciary responsibility when it comes to these contracts. I think we have three bids in front of us, one of them being $8,000 less than the others, and which is way less than what we can do it per year. And at this point, I think it would be really silly if we didn't do a three-year contract. With the inflation the way it is, there's no way we could get next year the same prices. I don't think that that's possible. I think that, you know, when you look at that $8,000 times 3 years, that's what?
24,
that's a pickleball court or a futsal court that we could put in. I just don't think it makes any sense not to do a three-year contract at the $37,200.
That's
okay. It
would have been nice to have that argument last year.
Yeah. Why would Gina, Outback Spray LLC, $37,200 for the next 3 years? Same thing.
I'll start off. It would have been nice to have that argument last year. Outback Spray was the highest, and nobody was saying go with the lowest. They were arguing against it. So I guess it's typical of a educational process in contract. And
if you recall, though, they didn't meet the bid requirements.
Yeah.
Well, later on, as it was found out, but anyways, I'll move on. That was a comment I wanted to make. This is a shame on us situation. We passed a budget, and we had an opportunity to take care of that. Everything we're talking about right now during budget season. And so we've authorized the mayor and the city to enter into a one-year contract with Outback Spray. And this now becomes a budget discussion. I think we get tougher. And if we see some issues, we bring them up. This is a shame on us. We should have had this discussion. And we sat in plenty of budget meetings. So I take full responsibility for 1/7 of the reason we're sitting here having this conversation. So, like I said, my 1/7 didn't bring it up, but I think we have an opportunity to learn and grow from this and discuss and look at our budget and figure out how we can fit something into our budget through departmentalization and all of the growth that plans that we have, and start evaluating that. I mean, that is our fiduciary obligation in this. So I say we've already authorized them to enter into the one-year agreement, and I think we see what these guys say, and let it bring, come back before council if they choose to back out. So
if they back out, then we got to move fast, because until we move fast, or we take Evergreen, at a $9,000 shop more, $8,000, $9,000. If they back out, so just to be aware of what we're going to do. Well, if that happens, we're going to pay $8,000 more. If they take 1 year, we're going to pay $8,000, $9,000 more for this year coming, right? If we don't get geared up for Public Works to do it.
So, all right, absolutely. You're right. I'm back at Amalote Math and putting it right out there for everybody to see. But just like when you have to pay more for your windows, you kind of make it up over here on the framing. That's what we do at budget time. If we were serious about self-performing this activity and we can figure out how to fit it in our budget, we get our $8,000 back.
So you're right, Angel, but the only thing I don't like about the scenario that unfolded was that option given to them in the bid documents? And Sean, you were going to check on that. And
this was a one-year contract up to 3 year. So it was a, Kelly?
Yes.
It was a one-year contract. That's how the bid went out.
Yeah, the bid went out as a one-year contract and that they would potentially, or that there was a possibility that could be up to a three-year contract and asked to provide a bid, though, for 1 year.
Was it a bid bond in play? Was there a bid bond?
I didn't look at that. I don't think there was a bid bond because it's not a Public Works contract. So it wouldn't be
so
required.
He just doesn't
it was a personal service contract.
They could do a bid bond, or not a bid bond, they could do a performance bond.
Well, I was thinking a bid bond, if he backs out of this bid, we keep the bond, and that's a little bit more teeth. There's a little bit more teeth than
but it wasn't.
Solicitation.
So it wasn't. Okay, so it's my turn. One of the things Councilman Angel brought up, and I've heard over and over, and also I've heard it from people in the East District, is that when you pull, what happens ultimately, you go out and you spray, and on an ideal day, they can go out and finish the work that they want to do. But ideal days don't always come up, and so then they have to be pulled off the job, and then if you don't have specific designated people to just spray. So that's a struggle. That's a, just an operational struggle that you run into. The other thing is, you know, you're talking about going down people's alleys and the liability that's involved in doing that. I'm here to help make decisions and bring you guys information so you guys can make good decisions, but I just don't think that the risk is worth it. The additional cost of the insurance, I was only estimating at $2,500. It could be more, but we also are then talking about spraying in all those areas, and then.
So this person's going to carry his own liability insurance. So, like, you know, is it going to cost us $60,000 to sue him because he killed somebody's fence? Trees on their fence.
Well, that's our responsibility to make sure he's up to date on his.
I mean, how is that going to play out? I hear this liability stuff, but bottom line is, we hired the guy to do a job in the city, and we have a contract with him. And if he screws up, we're still liable.
Okay, but Kelly, you want to? Yeah, that's a legal issue.
Yeah, I can address that. So, if you. You're right. You're somewhat right and somewhat wrong. So, from a legal perspective, yes, the city technically could be held responsible for contractors' actions in our that we've hired them to do. That is possible. However, we are having them do it. We do require them to, which is a layer of protection. It's not us. They're not our agents. They're independent contractors. That's spelled out in the agreement. But also, they're required to get insurance coverage with certain limits that we specify and name the city as an additional insured. And they're also required to give us a certificate of insurance that names us as an additional insured, which is our proof. And we go to the insurance company if there's ever a suit, and we say, look, well, no, you issued this certificate on this form. Named the city as an additional insured, you have to defend. You have to accept the defense, and you need to indemnify the city. There's a legal obligation there. If they refuse, it's a simple court process relatively simple court process to force that to happen. So, yeah, could we be named as a suit? Yes, but we're protected by the by their insurance.
They would have to pierce, the homeowner would have to pierce some armor to get to the city. And the armor is that the contractor and his insurance company with their environmental pollution liability.
Right. And as a practical matter, their damages, frankly, would have to be so high as to exceed the limits of insurance that would trigger the city's umbrella coverage. But that's to the extent it applies. But that's the protection of having independent contractors do a lot of services. That's why you see a lot of cities like Spokane Valley is considered a contract city, because most of their services are contracted for, and they do that, one, for economics, because they do it where they believe that cities like that, not just Spokane Valley, but do that where they think they can get the cost less expensive. But the other consideration is the limitation of liability. And that's the model of cities like that. And that's the second major reason they do it, other than just cost.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. So I guess my conclusion, because I'm entitled to that conclusion as well, is that I don't think, first reason I think is that, we have to go back to the union and negotiate this. Two, I don't think it's worth the liability for us to do it. And three, I don't think the annual cost that he's charging, the city budgeted $45,000 for this. This is coming underneath budget. I don't see why. I mean, I'm a businessman. I've been a businessman in this town for 39 years. I mean, this isn't rocket science here. So I'd entertain a motion to approve a 3-year contract. That's what I would do.
Well, we have a motion. You would have to write that up because, I mean, we voted on and passed a motion for a 1-year contract. But tonight, we're just having a discussion. We're not, there's no motion in this agenda item.
Well, we can't finish it because we didn't get an answer if they're going to take the 1 year.
Yeah, but that's slow playing it. That's nonsense. We're coming around the corner. This is our last meeting before the 4th. So now it's going to be, oh, well, we couldn't spray until July because you guys argued about it. 7 days to get an answer back from a contractor, not that dang hard day. That's bull honky. I don't buy one bit of it.
Okay, well, I think I'll listen to our legal counsel, Kelly. We can entertain a new motion to approve a 3-year contract.
Question is, I guess I'm not sure. Because, just thinking through it, we had a motion at the last city council for a 1-year contract. It was approved. The offer, the communication was extended to Outback, and we haven't heard back. Is that correct? We haven't heard back from Outback. So we have an outstanding offer to a contractor. I would not do that. I would advise against doing that tonight. I don't know if there's a procedural issue with it, since it wasn't on the agenda for a motion tonight. So my decision has nothing to do with that. I'm not saying it's improper or proper to bring a motion tonight, when we had only had an informational item on the agenda. The reason for my opinion is this. It's an issue of timing. For example, if the motion is made tonight to make a 3-year offer, I just don't want to have two offers out there at the same time. I'm just thinking through this, even though it's going to the same contractor. It creates enough moving parts that I'd be uncomfortable saying that we could do it tonight.
According to the bid, it said that we could do it. It was for a 1-year contract, but it could be extended to a 3-year contract. That's what the bid said.
So if he accepts the contract and we like his services, and after budget season's over and we decide that departmentalizing is not what we want to do for the spray contract, we say, Outback spraying, we're extending your contract for another 2 years. Problem solved. All on the standing accepted motion we have.
But the 37.2 is for 3 years, so he could come back and say for 1 year it's 50.
No, 37.2 a year.
A year.
Right, yeah. No, but he quoted us to secure it for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why you guys don't want a 37.2 for the next 3 years. I don't understand what your thinking is. I mean, I'm a businessman, but I mean, my God, if some guy's coming to me for 37.2 for 3 years, you can create all the arguments you want to, but you're not.
How about a $90,000 saving over 3 years?
Okay, you don't have that figured out. I mean, in your head, and the last time you came through with figures, you were telling us that he was charging us $350.
I've got those figured out as well as these are figured out. These are not accurate numbers on here.
They're going to change anyway.
They're not accurate numbers. So my thinking of that $90,000 savings is as accurate as your thinking when you load this up.
Okay, so we disagree. But I'm saying you have an opportunity to do a 3-year contract. I don't understand what's the objection.
So you're saying 90,000.
I don't know where the big savings are going to come from.
How can you? So 90,000 in 3 years. So 7 times 3 is the 7,000 we're talking about. How can you pay labor and chemical
hold on.
For 21,000 for the next 3 years?
You can ask me a question. I'm going to answer. Okay. So it's $37,000 a year for Outback. The annual cost of what we're given, even if I do buy. And I do buy most of the numbers, just most of the equipment numbers I'm not buying. And annual cost is $78,000. Terry wants another guy anyway. He's counting for two guys. So one of those guys, it's $65,000 a year. So minus that $65,000 a year, with the $8,000, all right, hold on, I'm confused here now.
The guy Terry wants.
You're right,
where
you're going.
So the annual cost on here is $78,500.
The only argument I have with that is this. So he's bringing another man, okay? He's going to take him to the Figueres Park, right? Do we know if that guy is going to be available to spray, or is he going to be maxed out already over there? We don't know.
Wait.
No, I agree with that. Last year there was 200 hours spent spraying weeds in this town.
Okay. I got something to say about that, because Terry stood up here and told us that even with an extra guy, that what happens is they get pulled off of the duties of spraying to go and do other things, to put out other fires. But that's what he said. That's what he said that happens, and that's what's happened in the past, is people get pulled off the jobs to go put out other fires because we don't have the manpower.
That happens with every single job in public works. Every single job.
But then we're not going to get as good a job done spraying.
Or if they get pulled out, if you got these guys that are learning, if you get pulled out from off a good job, that it's a water job or it's a sewer job, you're pulling them off, you kind of want them there because you want them to learn the ropes, because Dan might be gone here in the next few years and whoever else retires. You want these guys to start learning what we want them to learn, the heavy stuff. And
absolutely,
that's great.
I agree with you. And I do think that we should have at least a couple people with licenses. And I think the city should be stepping up and paying for those licenses. And I think when they're doing jobs like
they
this,
do pay for those licenses.
They should be, they're going to have to be monthly training. We're not going to be able to hire somebody with, we're not going to hire somebody with a license, not for $20 an hour. But when they're doing jobs like this, the pay should be stepped up while they're on this job.
From a money perspective, to secure a contract for 37, just from the ag that we've seen, like the chemicals have doubled in price. To be able to secure a contract for 3 years with inflation, I guess I don't know if it seems more like it's a personal thing against Outback versus the cost, because I'm having just, I guess like Sean, understanding the numbers, it seems pretty obvious, but just in the chemicals alone, I don't know how much chemical is being used, but those prices have gone. gone ridiculously high even from last year to this year. So securing 37,200 seems.
That's why we mentioned in the last meeting 37,200 for the next 3 years. You know, with the inflation that we're having, not a bad deal.
Yeah, we've seen it big time. Yeah, they can't even secure some of the product right now. Some of the chemicals needed.
And before we approved the 1 year contract, there was it was on the table for 3 years, and that was defeated.
So is there any way, Kelly, without having a new motion, to amend a previous motion?
Well,
since it hasn't been accepted.
Yeah, I mean, it has been accepted, so there's not a binding contract. I just keep going over this in my mind. Yeah, it's just my it's just me not having had this situation. It wasn't on the agenda. You know, can we? It's basically a sua sponte motion. This is what I would recommend. We could, I think, if the motion is going to be made, the form of the motion should include that it's conditioned on just a review of the procedural aspect of it, how the vote came up, and that if that is a, so the motion would be for approval of a 3 year contract, amending the offer of a 1 year contract on the spray contract, amending that offer to be a 3 year contract to Outback spraying, and that the, and that recognizing that council needs to review the procedure by which this vote came to council tonight, just to ensure that it is a valid vote. I believe that it would be. Just out of abundance of caution, though, I would like, if a motion is made, if you could include that condition in the form of the motion, I would appreciate that.
So, the way the request for quotes is written, it's up to 3 years. We're not in bad shape. You can give them a 3 year contract. You don't even have to do it tonight. It's up to 3 years. If he does a good job, you secure him for another year.
I just don't want to keep coming back and going over this, guys. I mean, I've had enough of this. I mean, this is a $37,000 a year contract, and you guys continue to go round and round and round with it. And I'm tired of dealing with it.
So, Danny, can somebody tell me why he hasn't responded yet in 1 week? Because it's very precarious that he has not responded in a week, and now we're talking about a new darn motion. That chaps my hide. I can't, that's bad business. I don't know why he hasn't responded.
I agree with that part. But
yeah, absolutely. Now we're talking about a new motion.
That's
junk.
Well, we should have got it on the ballot. I mean, we should have had it as a motion if we were going to handle it this way. Right now, this is just informational. It was discussion. There is no form of a motion to put together.
Well, Kelly laid out
made a motion for an annual contract with him for the amount that he gave. If he wants to extend it for 3 years, tell him he's got the contract now. If he wants it for the other 2 years, to secure that contract, then we can vote on that.
We can amend that contract
later. At the following meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on the record that
yeah.
way.
But enter into a contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was told one time early on in my tenure here, I absolutely hated those temperature taking machines. But there was a vote and it passed and I brought it up and I was told, we've already discussed it and we voted on it. We're moving forward. Well, fair enough. Defeated. So we voted, we discussed it, let's move forward.
If he accepts the contract, we can bring it back to extend the contract.
Absolutely.
at the next session.
Okay.
Yeah, we're out there already. We don't have council next week.
Yeah.
We're gonna put off another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it'd be 2 weeks from tonight, that would be the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And is that Memorial Day?
Yeah, we don't have council the 30th either.
When's Memorial Day, the 30th or the?
30th.
It's the 30th.
Or 31st, whatever.
And make sure we don't guarantee him that he's going to get that. That's going to be a vote of the council.
Okay.
I don't see why. Yeah.
Well, the mayor doesn't decide that. Council does, so.
Well, from this informational discussion we've had tonight, that's my suggestion, is talk to the individual, tell him that he does have it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
He does at the cost. And that if you know, he doesn't, don't make it a deal breaker.
Depending on his performance or what?
You know, well, no, I mean, we can extend it to 3 years.
Well, just gonna, okay, yeah.
But we're not gonna do that right now.
Yeah.
If he's interested in the 3-year contract, we can extend it to, you know, we can bring it back and vote on it to extend it to 3 years.
If it's a deal breaker for him, then we'll.
Getting this 1-year contract quickly.
Yeah. Get it so he can start working.
No, we got 2 weeks, spring.
Yeah.
We've already been spraying like crazy.
Yeah, ours are already curled up.
Okay, I'll do that. We'll do it that way. All right, so now, let's now move to. Losing my place. Okay, item 4E. We're actually gonna have two executive sessions, but they will run. They will not run concurrently. It's a fancy way to say we'll have one. The first one, which is actually it's 4F. We're gonna have a discussion of real estate. And then we're gonna go into executive session for 20 minutes. We'll come back out and then we'll go announce that we'll go into executive session again for potential litigation. We don't anticipate any action taken in those sessions. So with that, I'd like to go into executive session at 7:27 p.m. And this discussion is going to be approximately 20 minutes regarding real estate. So if the council or if the staff will please prepare the council chambers. Potential litigation. And we'll go into executive session at 8 p.m. and I anticipate 20 minutes, no action will be taken.
This conference will now be recorded.
Okay, the city's now back in session at 8:29 p.m. and we will now move to item 5G or 5, which is unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business, Councilor?
The ASR project. When's our next update going to be there? I guess not unfinished business, it's just a question. And then do we have to update our M&I contract? Our M&I water?
Aren't they supposed to be giving us their final report?
Okay. Going back to the ASR, mm-hmm. They're going to give us a final report. Well, a report on the results in June because of the amount of time it takes to, they want the water to settle and so that they can have data on that. The M&I water with the district for the Tagaris Park, are you talking about?
No, for the ASR, the pump's still out there.
Okay, so. I think the long-term plan, this all needs to go through committee, but I think the long-term plan, John, is that they're going to keep that pump. AJ Ochoa agreed to keep the pump and all the line in the ground. And at some point, if this makes sense, we're going to build a water treatment plant. And so.
But the M&I contract's over, right?
For that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the pump has to go.
What is it?
Or some kind of discussion, so that would probably...
Who should I discuss this with?
John McCordy.
Why would you give up with? You got an M&I water contract for how much? An acre feet?
I don't know. Was that just temporary?
They only did a one-year contract?
Don't quote me on it, and that was...
Let me look into it more. I'll let you...
Well, how are you going to feed all of the new housing in Angel's development?
I got the tower right there, I was doing it.
We're going to put in a new diversion.
That's supposed to be a city utility.
Yes, we're going to...
So you need M&I water for that?
Yes.
Oh, for irrigation.
You should have a standing M&I water contract of 1,000 acre feet. You should.
What's that?
$49,000.
Yeah, it is going to happen. We got the money to build the transmission line and the...
Irrigation pump.
The diversion pump?
M&I water is cheaper than irrigation water.
Okay.
For 1,000 acre feet, it's $49,000. Now you have an assessment fee from the district, but it's all based on acreage.
So I'd have to look at how the assessment's going to go on.
They charge us $73,000.
Not prepared to answer the question at that level yet, so, yeah, I can be prepared.
But these things we set up to be in play, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want freaking treated water to be, you know, potable water to be used for irrigation.
Right.
For watering lawns, yeah.
Right, so we did get a grant that'll pay for two diversions, one at the south end of town and one up in Angel subdivision. And those diversions will be used to provide the irrigation water. Those are the two subdivisions that...
But right now, the houses that are in play are using potable water.
I know. We haven't set it up yet, though.
Let's get a move on.
Well...
We just got that grant, didn't we?
Yeah, we just signed the contract not that long ago. Okay, any other unfinished business? New business? Chief?
Real quick, you all saw what happened down in Sunnyside this last weekend?
Yeah.
Cinco de Mayo Festival. A juvenile decided to open fire at a crowded festival. Five kids were shot, one seven-year-old, and the youngest, one kid got shot in the face. We're seeing a significant increase in crime. Kennewick is, surrounding areas are, Yakima, so as we're moving and continuing forward into our festival, which is our biggest festival, 4th of July here, mm-hmm. We're doing everything we can to, and I want to get in front of this so you know what we're doing. And as we're staging it out, you just approved the camera, which is absolutely mission critical. Moving Abner's project forward, I am 100% behind what he's doing. At the next city council meeting, we'll be bringing an ordinance modification to you that amends our OMC on our park rules, because our prosecutors have decided they won't charge trespassing when we trespass a criminal out or a person that's breaking the park rules out of the parks. So we created a due process mechanism in that. That's going to be absolutely mission critical to us. As we move into, as we keep going here, within the police department, we've identified an officer and every squad, detectives and SROs, that'll be getting together biweekly to basically create a ad hoc gang unit. So we'll be much better prepared with that. Then as the 4th of July happens, we'll have a two-man unit going around doing the normal fireworks stuff, because every year you get the complaints about people lighting fireworks. Their job will be nothing but pushing or suppressing illegal firework use. But at the festival, we'll have a command post set up that's readily identifiable. We'll have it staffed for the entire event. We'll have two officers on overtime patrolling at the at the event on the grounds the entire time. Surrounded with the SROs, our street crimes unit, and patrol, everybody, I mean, we actually blacked out that as a no vacation day. That's actually a Monday. So we'll have all that staff available, and they'll be tasked on all ends of the park trying to keep it safe. And we think we can accomplish a safe event. If we can't, we'll let y'all know. Chamber, I believe they're having that discussion tomorrow. My hope is that they're doing it on the 4th of July, which is the Monday. So, any questions?
Do we have signage for ordinances for the park use right at the gates?
We have some.
There's some signage.
It's mainly just, you know, hours.
It doesn't list the rules. But the rules that will be coming in front of you 2 weeks from now are the additions that we add is no gang activity, no urinating, defecating, that kind of stuff, which wasn't in the rules.
Do we allow firearms?
You can't stop it. It's awesome. You can't do anything about that.
You can't bring a firearm to this meeting, but I don't believe we can prevent it in a park. We could if it was a public meeting. Now,
what is that under the new
the new state law was that you can't bring a firearm into a public meeting or anywhere near a march.
Unless you have a concealed carry.
Yeah.
Nope.
And then if you have the concealed carry permit and we tell you to leave or we know about it, then we're supposed to tell you to leave. I mean, but we're not worried about that here. Corey, your question was, I'm sorry, you just asked something. John asked one, you asked something else, I thought. You asked why. Why do we need these rules? The reason we need these rules is the majority of our crime increase that we're seeing right now is juveniles. They can't be charged with a civil infraction because they're kids. But we can trespass them. So I need the rule violation to trespass them out of the park for the period. No.
Oh, I thought you were talking about maybe that's true.
No, John asked what if we had signs. We don't need signs that say that. We don't have to publish the law on a big sign for you to know. No, we're not. I wouldn't even recommend that. No. It's your responsibility as citizens to read the laws.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Any other new business, Council?
What's up? It's okay to bring it back.
All right.
Yeah, ignorance is not a defense.
Moving to item 7, the Council will also receive the legislative report and the Building and Planning report for April. Is that correct? Having no further business. Close tonight's meeting at 8:39 p.m.